You can go in depth. Like, we can go pretty geeky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't...
Welcome back to Horse Talk. This is Doc Yardley. I have somebody new in this studio with me, which is very exciting. I have Dr. Hillary Rice. She is a board-certified equine surgeon who specializes in orthopedics and lameness. There's been a lot of feedback that everyone wants to learn about arthritis, which joint supplements to use, which are better than this. Like our students, I have to rein them back and tell them, you have to know why it happens first before we can just treat something. This is into a two-part series. So the first part is going to learn about what osteoarthritis is. The next part, we'll talk about treatment and management, and we will try to find... I know people asked about Summit and MAP5 and polyglycan, and I'm going to say right now that in our quick search of the literature, it's hard to make a recommendation or something that is not backed with a study. Otherwise, you know, Dr. Rice and I could make our own supplement up and sell it and call it like the Rocky Mountain Specialists here. We could say it's amazing. I could make a fancy PowerPoint and I could sell it to everyone and I would get away with it because it's not FDA approved. So that's what we are. We'll try to get the best evidence we can. So this week, once you guys listen to this podcast, learn about some arthritis, hopefully it will kind of tee back into how these treatments actually do work. I have Dr. Rice introduce herself. So Dr. Rice, you went to vet school at Washington State in Spokane, is that correct?
It's technically in Pullman.
Pullman, okay, yes, Pullman. Is that where the famous car, the train cars are made, the
yes.
Pullman car.
There's a museum there. You
is
can
there?
Go into the train car.
Oh, I should have. I've been in Pullman one time. I should have gone.
You gotta go there.
Yeah. Spokane. I've been to Spokane too. Very small.
Very small, but it's on the Palouse. That it's very beautiful.
It is beautiful.
With all the wheat.
With all the wheat and wine. It's a big wine country
it
out
is.
In Eastern Washington.
Eastern Washington.
And it's a little arid too, which you wouldn't think.
Yeah, it's not as rainy as Western Washington, and it's kind of nice to go to vet school there because it's not like there's a ton to distract you from your
distraction is a thing.
Studies.
Yeah. I went to Tufts University, and our vet school was on an old mental institution.
Oh,
so
wow.
We didn't have much to do out there. We were in the middle of quote unquote nowhere for Massachusetts. It's really not. It was a suburb of Boston, 45 minutes outside, but we had 200 acres of farmland on an old mental institution. So we didn't get in a lot of trouble or have a lot much to do.
Yeah.
You had to go hang with the locals if you wanted a beer. Not like here at OSU where
no.
I don't know where our students go at night. All over.
All over.
Yeah. They go up and down High Street. Sometimes they come in a little. Looks like they've been on High Street a little too long.
They have the best recommendations for restaurants, though.
The students do, yeah.
I make them make me lists of restaurants to go to.
Yeah, they go out more than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know all the stuff.
And then they tell me they don't have any money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, let's talk about your budget. What do you spend on going out to eat? Like, well, do you call Uber Eats going out to eat? I'm like, well, I do, because you didn't buy it from the grocery store. So, yeah. Oh, our students. They do make the job fun, though.
They do.
Otherwise, I'd be doing the same thing every day, and it'd be pretty boring.
Yeah, exactly. They keep it interesting.
You graduated from Washington pretty high in your class. You guys don't have grades there, which is super cool.
Yeah, we don't.
We're not going to have grades here.
But we do have
ranking.
Class rank,
which is probably important for an internship and residency.
Yes, yes.
Next year, there'll be no grades here at OSU.
Really?
Yeah, starting the first year class.
Will there be class ranks?
Of course there'll be class ranks.
Gotta have it.
Gotta have something for people that go on to... It's going to help them mentally.
I think so, too.
That way they're not always competing. And then you went to Littleton Clinic to do a pretty vigorous internship, I assume?
Yes, rotating through medicine, surgery, field service, anesthesia, got all the components there.
Anesthesia. Dr. Timko and I talked about anesthesia, of how here at Ohio State we have nurse anesthetists and internships.
It's amazing.
We have, yeah.
And we're spoiled.
We are spoiled. And like, I did anesthesia as an intern. Different.
Different.
I don't know if I was prepared. They did have a tech that helped me, though, which was good.
Yes.
At least here. Carl's amazing.
Carl's amazing.
Yeah.
Devin's amazing.
I trust them. Yeah, they know what they're doing. So then you did a residency here.
Here.
And a master's at the same time.
Yes.
And exactly. What was your master's in?
I did research in Palmar osteochondral disease, so a disease in racehorses that affects the fetlock.
Yes. I do remember that research project.
Yes.
That was a different one. Did it get published?
It did.
Really?
It did.
Yeah. I shouldn't be so surprised.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Yardley.
You're welcome. Where did it get published at?
In VCOT.
VCOT. I don't know that
Veterinary and Comparative Orthopedics and Traumatology.
Traumatology, yeah. That was cool. So you got to use a lot of MRI.
Yes, that was the best part.
Yeah, so you learned a lot about MRI. Mm-hmm. So I think with all that research and being a surgeon, you probably know about osteoarthritis, right?
Unfortunately, I have to deal with osteoarthritis.
Basically, every day. Every day. More than I do. I mean, I see a lot of lame horses, but that's what you do all day. So why don't you just kind of... So people are thinking about arthritis. They think about, like, I don't know. I always think of, like, my grandmother. Like, oh, yeah. She has arthritis. She can't move. Our animals, yeah, the old horses get arthritis. But, like, we're working on, like, the young animals that are getting, like, juvenile arthritis, mm-hmm. especially that metacarpal disease is, a young horse disease. Mm-hmm. So why don't you just kind of go over what the joint is made of, and that's going to kind of help key us in for treatments of how these treatments might help in the joint environment.
Like Dr. Yardley said, I think it's important to kind of know what the structure of the joint is, and I think that that's helped us kind of shape what we... now understand is what osteoarthritis really is. You know, we originally thought it was just related to the cartilage in the joint itself, and now we know that all the components of the joint play a role in it. You have your joint capsule, which basically encloses the joint. You have the synovial membrane, which is going to be right on inside of the joint capsule. That has all your cells that make your joint fluid, what you see coming out of the needle. And of course, you have your bone, which is covered by what we call articular cartilage. So cartilage that contacts another surface of bone and cartilage. Underneath that cartilage is what we call our subchondral bone. So that just means bone that's right below the cartilage. And then obviously you have your soft tissue, so your ligaments, and maybe those don't necessarily attach or run within the joint themselves, but they're just on the outside of your synovial membrane or your joint capsule. So any sort of injury to those can affect the joint itself.
So collateral ligaments are importantly found in the foot, like mm-hmm. they hold that coffin joint together, and probably half the time they're more injured than the coffin joint. Intimately connected. And can you get a collateral ligament injury and get a fusion or filling in the joint?
Absolutely.
So even though we look at the joint, we tap it, we medicate it, and we get fluid out, this doesn't mean it's because the cartilage is bad.
Right.
And I think that's something that we always are like, it's only the cartilage. I don't know. There's a lot more to it. And what about those cells? Those cells are, what do they make in there? They make the joint fluid?
They make the joint fluid. There's different components of that.
You can go in depth. Like, we can go pretty deep.
Obviously, when there's, any sort of trauma or inflammation to the joint, what those cells will secrete and things like that is going to be a little bit different and bring some of those inflammatory products into the joint fluid itself.
So when they're being well behaved, what are they secreting?
Those cells within the synovial lining are going to produce your normal products that keep that joint fluid nice and viscous, thick, more like maple syrup is what you're thinking.
That's what I say when I inject the joint too, maple syrup, yeah. Sometimes motor oil, but I think maple syrup's a better analogy because it's a little lighter.
Yeah.
So that's going to keep it nice and thick. And then when those synoviocytes get pissed off, they start secreting like white blood cells and like some cytokines maybe?
Exactly. And those are what can kick off a cascade of inflammation. And inflammation is what we know now plays a big role in the development of osteoarthritis.
Okay. So once you injure the joint, whether it's the cartilage, the ligament, soft tissue, anything, mm-hmm. we get inflammation, we get some cytokines. IL-1, is that a bad one? Yeah, it's a bad one for the cartilage. Yeah, and we have therapeutics to target it. Exactly. So it's going to start off this inflammatory storm, like a tornado of events. Mm-hmm. It's going to go downhill quickly.
It goes downhill quickly.
And then we're going to try to prevent that.
Exactly.
In your day-to-day, how much of the reported lameness cases do you think are due to osteoarthritis?
It's definitely the majority, at least 60%.
Wow.
That's pretty major when you think about, all of the reasons that horses are lame.
Just OA alone.
Just OA alone.
Which is probably why the industry is so big to sell products
exactly.
to try to prevent it.
There's so many products out there.
So many products. The horse is going to keep exercising its joint. Even though, say, it pissed itself off, it's inflamed, it's angry, we're still going to load the joint, right? So we're still going to put weight on the joint. So how does, like, if they have an angular ligament deformity, would that change, would that cause weight-bearing surfaces to change or not?
Absolutely. So when we think about how osteoarthritis develops, we can kind of break it down into two groups. You have your normal stresses, your normal activity, normal day-to-day cycling of those joints. And if that's on an abnormal joint, so a horse with an angular limb deformity, some sort of OCD, those normal stresses on an abnormal joint are going to cause inflammation in the, you know, the joint capsule, the synovial membrane, and that's going to then kick off this cascade.
So even if you had like an unbalanced foot, it could mess up the horse's leg.
Absolutely, because you have an unbalanced foot. Put stress on those collateral ligaments, inflammation in the collateral ligament with it being so close to the joint is going to affect the joint itself.
When we harp on shoeing techniques, it's really important.
It's really important.
Because a really bad shoe job is going to mess the horse up.
No foot, no horse.
No foot, no horse. I heard that yesterday from a client. They were telling the student that. The student didn't appreciate it, but it is very true. This horse had a foot abscess.
Or, yeah.
No, this horse had a foot abscess. It was cool. This horse had a foot abscess, but it acted like string halt. Have you seen that before?
Oh, wow.
It's my third case of it. So they get like a heel bulb abscess, and then they before they blow it out, they have string halt.
They have string halt.
It's crazy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
I've seen it three times in my 16 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways,
horses,
they do whatever they want. So you said OCD. So we, when the babies, like I try to have, like in Thoroughbred land, they screen these things every 2 minutes with x-rays, maybe every what, 4 months, 5 months, they're taking x-rays. And they're looking for, so what is an OCD? So my wife's a psychologist, so that's obsessive compulsive disorder in the human literature. What is it in the veterinary literature?
Yes. Some people are OCD about OCDs, but.
Ooh, I like it.
OCD.
Could be the title of the talk.
OCD would be osteochondritis dissecans. That is something that occurs sort of in the development process in foals. And basically what happens is there's this natural kind of forming and remodeling of the joint as the horse ages. And whether there's some sort of disruption in the blood supply to the developing bone and cartilage, sort of trauma potentially that causes necrosis of that cartilage, and you get sort of this little island of cartilage that's no longer got a healthy blood supply, causes basically what you see on an x-ray as a chip in the joint or something like that, or you know, a defect in the cartilage. And that can typically, in order to preserve the joint, you know, anytime we have any sort of abnormalities in the cartilage, we're increasing our inflammation in the joint. Inflammation is really important in formation of osteoarthritis. You know, typically we're recommending getting those fragments out of the joint to try to preserve the joint for the future.
Which is why you want to screen them as much as possible as a youngster.
As much as possible. The one thing about OCD is they're typically not located in weight-bearing surfaces of the joint. You know, it's not necessarily about the fact that there's, you know, impact on this abnormal area. It's more about the inflammation within the joint.
So just pissing it off more. Although sometimes on some of those stifles, right, it's going to be weight-bearing, some of them, I guess. You did say, I'm going to go cycle back slightly, about angular limb deformity. So it's like why on a pre-purchase we kind of want them to be straighter. There are famous race horses that are crooked-legged, but
yeah.
The straighter the better, probably.
Exactly. And horse's leg isn't in a normal conformation. They're going to be putting stress on areas that aren't supposed to be getting stress or overloading stress. And you know, certainly there's been studies in young horses where, you know, it is important to put some sort of stress on those joints because that's going to increase the thickness of the cartilage, increase the strength of the bone. But when you get to a point where it's too much and you're overloading a certain area, that's where you get these micro traumas in your bone and end up resulting in osteoarthritis.
And you can fix that with some screws if they're young enough.
Yeah, depending on the age, and we look at kind of where the growth plates are in relation to where the kind of deformity of the leg is coming from, and depending on when those growth plates close, we can affect the growth.
Pretty successfully, too. We're kind of got that technique down. But you have to recognize it.
Have to recognize
right?
it.
You have to
you
recognize
have to keep
it.
A close eye on it, and oftentimes after correction, you need to monitor for overcorrection.
I think that was an important point you said about turning these horses, I interpreted it as turning the horses out as babies, that they
yes.
that they build their bone structure, right? You can't,
exactly.
You can't not exercise them.
Right.
They need to adapt to the strange. Now, they can over-adapt. And then I guess there's some belief that maybe turning them out could cause an OCD lesion if they, like, bang their cartilage or something. But the risk is so small that it's treatable. We need them to build good, strong bone and cartilage.
Exactly.
So you can't keep them stall-bound for life, even though people want to. Yeah, so it's good to watch them run around. I mean, right. Even in Kentucky, they have million-dollar foals. They're out running around with mom and dad. I mean, not dad, mom.
In the beautiful grass.
In the beautiful grass, the acrylic fields of Kentucky bluegrass of Kentucky,
But on the same note, if you do have a horse that has some sort of angular limb deformity or, you know, another disease in sort of the kind of juvenile diseases, joint diseases would be your incomplete ossification of your cuboidal bones, so those small bones in your carpus and tarsus or hock, you know, we're going to try to limit their activity because we don't want to put a lot of abnormal stress on them.
So how do we know if they don't have good cuboidal bones?
Good question. Definitely worth taking radiographs when they're young, and we only need a couple of views to assess that. Anytime the horse is premature or dismature, it's going to be important too.
Weird birthing. What would you do in all horses or just young, like?
Probably,
kind of,
you know, if there's
immature.
Any sort of dystocia situation, maybe if the mare had placentitis during gestation, that would probably be important. And obviously, if you notice any sort of abnormal angulation, contraction, anything in the limbs, you're going to take radiographs anyway to see.
And then what about the ones that with not angular limb deformity, but like they're too upright, their tendons are too tight?
Too tight.
So does that affect the joint, or is it just more a ligament or a tendon?
Yeah, so it actually can. So, you know, we think of it as tendon and ligament, but sometimes it's actually the joint capsule that is fibrosed.
I think we've seen that in a case or two together.
Unfortunately.
We have, unfortunately. He's doing better.
It's good.
Yeah. He's in a small paddock now.
Yeah.
The other thing that we've seen a little more recently, unfortunately, is some infections in the joints. Are they coming, what you're seeing in the hospital, are they coming from, like, lacerations across the joint, or are they just coming from veterinarians putting needles in the joints?
You know, we certainly see both. You know, anytime we put a needle in a joint, we're risking some sort of...
Very little. Less than 0.01% in the Australian study.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very low. The risk is very low, but we're putting needles in a lot of horses' joints, and sometimes that can just be an inflammatory reaction, and sometimes it can actually result in infection, and it's the same sort of process. Anytime bacteria is going to elicit a huge inflammatory response in the joint, that is going to predispose that joint to developing osteoarthritis.
Yeah, it's real bad.
It's pretty bad.
And you'll know if they're septic, right? They pretty much go non-weight-bearing a week or two after being injected.
Exactly. And the reason it takes so long is, you know, most of the time putting steroid in that joint, and that's going to dampen the immune response. We typically start to see signs of lameness more like 7 to 10 days after injection.
And then have you been seeing with different products recently, or is it all like kind of across the board all the same? Or
it's a good question. I mean, we've seen it recently with some types of steroid. Been getting harder to get some of the steroids that we typically use, so they're having to be compounded. And you know, not all compounding is the same, so.
Yeah, we've talked about compounding on this podcast before and the dangers of it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can kill the horse.
Right.
And there's lawsuits about that. The Depomedrol, is that the big one?
Yeah, this one's been pretty hard for people to get lately, I think, because it's being used for COVID in humans, so.
We can get it here, but we have special connections
with the medical center.
Mm-hmm. Septic arthritis, you're going to put the horse on the table, flush the joint probably.
Yeah, ideally arthroscopy if possible allows us to look in the joint, clean out any bacteria, fibrin.
Wait, you can see bacteria?
Well, no, but we're going to flush it out.
We're going to flush it, yeah.
We're going to flush out any inflammatory products that are holding on to the
bacteria. Fibrin, right? You're going to cut all that shit out of there? Mm-hmm. There's probably bacteria in that, right?
There's definitely bacteria in there.
Mostly, yeah. Cartilage is crying. It needs help.
The cartilage does not want that bacteria. It does not want that inflammatory.
Then those horses can go back to work, maybe?
I think with early intervention, in the literature, the prognosis is about 80% return to athletic function. Mm-hmm. But that's going to go down with kind of increased duration of the issue. And certainly there are cases where, you know, osteoarthritis kicks in pretty quickly, and and that's unfortunate.
So if a client, they can ask their veterinarian what product they're using, right? Have that conversation, like, hey, I don't want to use a compounded drug in my horse's joints. It, you know, I'm not going to use a compounded drug because my liability insurance doesn't cover me doing that. The famous Framingham compounding incident, are you aware of that with the humans where they were making Pre-Def and they were putting it in people's spinal cords and it was covered in fungal. People died of fungal meningitis.
Terrifying.
It is terrifying, yeah. Human MDs were just using it because they couldn't find the right product, quote-unquote right product, right. So they were just getting compounded in the Framingham lab. And it was, like, basically the pictures, if you, like, Google on Wikipedia, it looks like someone's bathroom. Like, it was disgusting.
Oh.
And they were selling it to major medical centers across the country. So it's a real problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you gotta make sure. I mean, the FDA approved, you at least know the factory should be up to standards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So a client's out there and they think their horse has lameness. What are some things that, like, we could see on the horse itself?
Yeah. You know, obviously lameness is probably going to be the first thing most people notice. Certainly there are those owners that are really good at noticing any small changes in their horses. So you can certainly see, you know, a joint that looks effusive. And we say effusion versus swelling. Swelling we think of more as fluid within the soft tissues around the joint. Effusion would be actual increase in the joint fluid itself. You might see something that looks like more joint fluid in a joint. You might see or feel like a joint is more thickened. That might be from the surrounding soft tissues. It might be from actually bony proliferation from osteoarthritis, because you can certainly get changes in the bone as well.
I feel like when you feel horses' hocks, they just feel thickened. I don't know if that's the right term, but they're just big, and you're like, oh, I don't know, something's going on here.
Yeah. And pasterns too.
And then for increased synovial fluid, I have astute clients that would be like, my horse has a profile on its knee. I mean, it's true. You look at it and there's a little bump out. Yes. You're like, yep, we need to address that.
Yes.
Yeah. So the horses are telling us. So even without x-rays right away, on good physical exam, we can start to hone in on where there's at least increased fluid. We don't know the cause yet, right. But at least we know to target that area.
Right. Yep. And then like we talked about, when Dr. Yardley puts the needle in the joint.
Or Dr. Rice.
Or me. We might assess the viscosity of the of the joint fluid. We want it to look like maple syrup. Typically, if there's a lot of inflammatory products in there, it's going to be more like water.
Watery. And then it's not as good. I usually tell the clients, if it's real watery, that I think that this joint injection is going to make a big difference. And I think it goes back to our tornado in the joint, right? Of all the bad inflammation going on in that environment, the tornado of cytokines is spinning around, and we just let the tornado go away a little, and then we put in a steroid or biologics that calm it down.
Right.
It hits a cold front or whatever. I don't know how to stop tornadoes, so I can't. My analogy has now stopped. But
I need a weather.
I need a weather analogy because I don't know how to stop tornadoes. But it slows it down basically. Maybe it hits a mountain. I don't think tornadoes go over mountains.
Yeah, I don't think they can.
Yeah. All right. So it hits a mountain.
Do you think you would ever be like one of those tornado chasers?
A tornado chaser? Would I? No. I like my life too much.
Yeah.
Maybe if I had like a tank. But, like, I don't really want to see a ton of destruction in life either. Like, I think that's kind of sad.
It
so,
is sad.
Like, I don't really like to watch on the news afterwards when they, like, fly the drones. And you're like, well, that could have been my house, too. Like, that really fucking sucks for those people.
It's terrifying.
I do have, in my house, is built in 1937. We do have an old coal basement.
Oh.
So we do have a completely cement, like, bunker.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so when the tornado sirens go off, I have a little extra food packed away. I'm not a prepper, but there's like a little water just in case we get stuck in there with the dogs. Yeah.
Do the sirens go off here every Wednesday?
Every Wednesday at noon. Yeah. That is to test the siren system.
In Minnesota, it was once a month, so I got very confused when I first
moved there. Yes. The students, when we're out in the countryside, get very terrified. And I'm like, look at the sky, guys. It's blue. And I know tornadoes can come in from the west, but like, it's fine. It's noon on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So, in Minnesota, they do it once a month.
Once a month on Wednesday.
On a Wednesday.
Yeah. First Wednesday of the month.
And I think they're like left over from the Cold War, like nuclear attack sirens is what they're left from. So.
If only there were sirens to let us know there's a tornado in the joint.
in the joint. Oh, there is. The horse is lame.
The horse is lame. That's our siren.
That is our siren. But we want to know before the siren. We want to put the mountain chain in front of it.
Exactly.
The viscosity is a major factor, and the inflammation is going to destroy it. We see the horse. We do a great physical exam. We watch the horse go. It's lame. I don't know, say right front, 3 out of 5. How are we going to diagnose it?
I was talking to the students about staying really consistent in your lameness exam, doing it the same way every time. So this would be no different. If we worried about lameness, probably go ahead and take a good feel of all of the legs. You know, we want to compare. That's the nice thing about having horses have 2 front legs, 2 back legs. We can compare with the other side. Sometimes it is bilateral. We're going to take a really good feel of the joints, see if it feels more like increased fluid versus actual just thickening or bony proliferation. And then we're going to watch them go. And the best way to watch horse go is on multiple surfaces, if possible. So you want to watch them on a firm surface and also on a soft surface, because lameness can look different in both of those. And then to actually localize it. After we watch them go, we might do some flexion tests to try to get an idea. That being said, older horses that do have some arthritis probably are going to have multiple joints that flex positive. I think if you flexed me, I would probably be positive too. So to really try to localize it, we'll probably do some sort of local anesthesia, so nerve blocks or actual joint blocks with carbocaine, lidocaine, to localize where the actual source of pain is coming from. And then our true diagnosis is going to be made with our imaging. So typically with osteoarthritis, or to the stage where we're getting bony changes, we'll see those radiographically. If it's early on and we really just have more what we call capsulitis or synovitis, where we just have inflammation in the joint capsular or synovial lining, maybe ultrasound is going to be a little bit more useful for that, because we might see thickening of that synovial membrane. And certainly in more advanced stages where getting injuries to damage to the subchondral bone and cartilage, some of our 3D imaging like CT and MRI is going to be really helpful.
I think MRI would be super helpful for like subchondral bone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really the only modality we have to see fluid within the bone.
And the ultrasound, I think, helpful for stifles, some hocks maybe, even a fetlock if the radiographs are clean.
Absolutely.
Maybe. And it's still blocked to that area.
Right.
They don't always jog the horse multiple surfaces. Right. They're just not available.
Right. Do your best.
Do our best. But it is important, too, because the horse could be lame on the hard top, but it doesn't, you know, live its life on the hard top. But it is a way to assess the... Probably skip over some flexions. If the horse is lame, there's a left front leg. I'm going to just block its left front leg.
Yeah. It's helpful.
Yeah. It is helpful. And then have you used a lameness locator at all to help with the confirmation of lameness?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nice to have that sort of objective measurement. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to, you know, for myself and to show students kind of how much improvement we're seeing in, you know, with nerve blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you think, oh, you know, that didn't change the horse at all, and lameness locator says 70% improvement, or vice versa. So it's nice to have that sort of objective measurement. And it's nice when you're then doing repeat lameness evaluations to kind of compare from previous. So
I used it for a pre-purchase exam this week. And it was good because it can compare its flexion. So I had like a good, like, yes, this was positive, this was negative, and this was slight. You know, it just kind of helped really fine-tune, I think, the findings of it. It doesn't tell you exactly where it is, but I thought it was nice, and especially for a pre-purchase, it gave me quantifiable data to share. So it's just not my opinion of if the horse is sound or not.
Right.
And there's some good research, I think, with it now.
Absolutely.
So maybe in the early days, the old software wasn't as good, the new software seems pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do have that. I think they're getting a little more common in practice.
I think so, too. It seems like some of the vets in the area that are calling in have already used the lameness locator.
And
that's nice for clients, for sure.
Do you send a lot of horses to bone scan land anymore?
Yeah, we do. I think, you know, bone scan is most useful for those cases where you do your nerve blocks and you really don't block out the lameness. And obviously with MRI and CT and even radiographs, we can't image the entire horse. And so, you know, nuclear scintigraphy or bone scan is basically our best way to get kind of a real overview of the entire horse and get imaging up high.
Do you do soft tissue phase immediately and bone phase?
Not usually, unless, you know, people are requesting it. Mm-hmm. It might be a little bit more useful in some the athletes, like, you know, racehorses and things like that, where we're concerned about suspensory mm-hmm. type issues.
And then for the MRI, just so people know, it's a human MRI. Like the
it is a human.
The bore is only so big.
It's only so big. That would be amazing if yeah. we could MRI stifles. And
yeah, so we can basically get a hawk in there.
It depends on the horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, sometimes if they have a big belly or something mm-hmm. like that, we can't actually get all the way in. You can get the majority of the hawk, but that's kind of the extent of what we're able to image.
And same with the CT?
Gantry's
only so big, and scanning MRI, but they still can only go up to like the corpus or hock probably, mm-hmm. and they're not really as good, right? The slices are a lot not pretty thick.
Yeah, not as thin of slices usually, and you know, certainly you can get a lot of information from the standing MRI, but mm-hmm. but the magnet strength is usually a little bit less than the magnet that we have, which does require general anesthesia.
Yeah, so the magnet is a standing is like, what, 0.8 or something?
Sometimes are one Tesla.
And ours are three Tesla. Mm-hmm. So you get better imaging, more information.
More information.
Yeah. Cost is probably a little more for us.
Yes.
Yeah, so what's an MRI cost if a client wants one to come in?
Cost now is about $2,300 to $2,500.
Okay.
And that includes a couple nights of hospitalization.
Mm-hmm.
The anesthesia covers the whole thing. It's a package price.
So out the door.
Out the door.
Why 25 to 23?
We just increase our package prices mm-hmm. a little bit, so I think it's 23, but it might
could be 25.
Yeah.
Plan on 25. That'll include the diesel to get here.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So MRI for the foot is amazing. Like, you can't diagnose a lot in the foot.
Right.
You know, we can take some x-rays of the navicular bone. It looks good or doesn't, but...
Right.
But the majority, over 50% of our foot injuries are soft tissue.
Soft tissue. And I think that's, MRI has really changed how we approach things like navicular disease mm-hmm. and navicular syndrome. That is kind of
caudal heel pain.
Call it now, yeah, caudal heel pain, because we are realizing that when you have changes in the appearance of your navicular bone, you probably have a lot of changes in your soft tissues too.
Yeah, that's super important.
Super important.
Can't inject your way out of that.
Can't inject your way out of that, and probably doing an neurectomy is not necessarily the best in all
no,
those cases.
Probably
anymore.
No cases. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen some sequela of old horses that were denerved, and their deep digital flexor tendon just got destroyed.
Destroyed.
And then they subluxated their coffin joint. And
it's not great.
Then they had to go to Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not good. So I don't know. And the nerve grows back after a couple of years anyways, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was an old treatment for the 80s that was good.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think resting them, treating them.
Sometimes actually doing surgery to, you know, put a camera in the navicular bursa itself and clean up some of the adhesions can be helpful.
And then you can leave some PRP behind maybe? Mm-hmm. What about some stem cells?
From
really? You're going to leave some stem cells behind? They're not going to go crazy, leave the joint?
Maybe stem cells in the future. We'll draw the bone marrow for the stem cells
really?
At the time of surgery, then come back with them.
And then come back? Put it through the bursa injection? Do you guys use a lot of stem cells here?
We use a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Durgam can culture expand them in her lab.
Oh, okay. All right. So you're not using commercial companies then?
Exactly.
It's a little different.
A little different.
So Dr. Durgam is our head researcher on
tendon
ligament injury. I trust that she can grow those.
Yes, she does a good job.
Because I feel like some of the commercial companies, you're just like, I don't know, is it really worth $10,000?
Right.
So what do we charge for stem cells?
Out the door, you know, which includes the draw and either, you know, sometimes the first injection
mm-hmm.
or we can ship them to... about $1,800.
That's it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's very competitive. Probably should do it more.
Yeah.
Do you think it helps them?
I think so. I think
yeah.
that's probably our best option.
Best option. More than PRP.
I think it depends. So PRP, I think, is useful for specific things. And one thing that I like about PRP is it also has antibacterial properties.
Mm-hmm.
So we are using that a lot in our septic arthritis cases where we're trying to combat bacteria and inflammation. I think they both have their place.
Okay. Do you think it's going to help with just run-of-the-mill arthritis?
No. Yeah, maybe more soft tissue injuries. Yeah. I was going to say one thing about the imaging, that certain joints, like the lower hocks, mm-hmm. and things like that, when we do see evidence of arthritis, don't necessarily correlate with the degree of lameness that we see.
That's a good point, yeah.
We need to take into account our entire lameness exam, how the horse has been working, before we say, condemn a horse for having arthritis in the lower hocks and things like that. Those are more low motion joints, so we don't get as worried about that. Certainly can cause performance limiting issues, mm-hmm. but some horses have pretty ugly looking hocks and actually do pretty well.
Yeah, it might be a high suspensory.
Right.
You get their hocks injected because it's a common probably source of lameness, but I think your point is well taken that the x-rays don't correlate. And I feel like you can have some horses that block to their hocks and not have any
right.
osteoarthritis too.
Right. And maybe that is more of the inflammation in the capsule and
mm-hmm.
synovial fluid than true.
So it doesn't always correlate.
Depends on the joint. Some of the high motion joints, it is going to
correlate better. Well, like the stifle.
Maybe you're fetlock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carpus. But we should still take the x-rays of the hawk.
Still useful.
See what's going on in there and get a baseline. Yeah, because you can still medicate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that wraps up this segment. I think we learned a lot about osteoarthritis. So hopefully everyone at home is listening and, maybe you have to go back and listen again. But we will next week kind of talk about some more treatment and management strategies. So knowing what the cartilage is made out of, what is in the synovial fluid, and how we come to the diagnosis. I think we'll probably break it into two parts. It'll be like quote unquote prevention, which is prevention would probably be not riding the horse, right?
Yeah, never use them. Although that might make it worse.
Yeah. So just having a dog instead will be prevention, and then treatment once you have osteoarthritis. And that could be a 3-part series depending on how long we go with each steroid or biological property. So, mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. And if you like what you're listening to, hit the subscribe button and share and like us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you.